John Lewis is the founder and president of Dr. Lewis Nutrition. He is a full-time associate professor at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. He's working to help people achieve optimal health through nutrition, dietary supplements, and exercise. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you, George, for having me. It's my pleasure to be here today.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal lives, more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Well, I would say my personal and professional lives intersect in the realm of the exact topics you just mentioned, nutrition. I've been eating a plant-based diet for the last 27 years, and dietary supplements, exercise. I was, in an earlier life, a drug-free competitive bodybuilder. I pursued that for a few years. I really never seriously pursued it in the sense of thinking I was going to eventually make a living doing it. It was more of just enjoying bodybuilding as a way of stimulating my body and you know, having some sort of post high school pursuit of competition, although really the competition's within yourself. If you're truly focused on, you know, getting on stage, it's not about what other people are doing. It's about what you're doing. But if nothing else, bodybuilding got me into a mindset of really looking into how nutrition and exercise can be utilized to turn your body into something. And prior to that, I mean, I don't know about you, I grew up in a family that ate for taste, not for health. So I didn't have any role model in my life, in my family, who, you know, was either a dietitian or somebody into coaching or anything like that, certainly not a physician or scientist, anybody that had any sort of sense of, you know, nutrition and exercise for health. We just ate for taste like most Americans do. But again, bodybuilding completely shifted me into looking at that. And then a few years after I got out of bodybuilding and I started looking into, I guess you could say, a deeper exploration of what we eat, even though at that point I thought I was eating pretty healthy, I was still eating quite a bit of animal food. And then eventually it led me down a road of going completely plant-based, and that's where I've been for the last 27 years. And then along the way, sort of a little bit after that, I met a couple of people who once again completely changed my focus, not only my career, but my life in terms of introducing me to their stories about polysaccharides. And from what I had learned about saccharides in general in school as a student, it was probably, I don't know, maybe a couple of lectures in biochemistry. And the only thing I knew really about saccharides at that point was that they are sources of fuel for the cells. But beyond that, I had no clue. And Dr. Reg McDaniel told me about all the fascinating things that he had learned about this polysaccharide from aloe vera. A pathologist in the Dallas area who went from basically running a pathology unit at a hospital to practicing nutrition based on some of the discoveries he and his colleagues made. And then Barbara Kimley, a patient here at the Cancer Center at the University of Miami, she told me about her story of basically being given up for dead, given a very terminal prognosis after having surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy from metastatic thyroid disease, to then living beyond the 6-month prognosis of like another 8-9 years taking this rice bran product, another polysaccharide. And so it led me down a path of conducting all these clinical trials in both of these two nutrients that, George, just again, not only changed my profession and one of the reasons I'm sitting here talking to you today, but really changed my life in terms of learning about how these two amazing plants that Mother Nature provides to us, aloe vera and rice, and how they can be so incredibly beneficial to health. I mean, it's really astounding the journey I've been on for the last 20 years. And I'm just really getting started in the sense of no longer being full-time in academics, now being full-time as a businessman, entrepreneur, running my dietary supplement company, but still having a very solid scientific base on all the work that my colleagues and I have published in the peer-reviewed literature, and then how that supports and how that is the foundation of the products that we have under the Dr. Lewis Nutrition label. So it's been an interesting journey already. I hope for the rest of my life, whether it's one more day or 40 more years, I hope that every day that I'm making one more little step in the progress of helping to spread a message of, I guess you could say, hope in some respects related to, you know, whether somebody's really dealing with a very serious health challenge or just, again, helping to educate people about what polysaccharides are, why they're important, why they're beneficial for health, and how simple they are really to take. I mean, it's not like, you know, doing some elaborate thing. I mean, it's not changing your diet. It's not getting people to go to the gym. It's actually a very simple behavior, taking a dietary supplement. It's not anything like, you know, modifying your diet, which for a lot of people is practically impossible. So that's who I am and where I am today. And hopefully your listeners will enjoy learning a little bit more about my work and how it may benefit them.
Yeah, excellent. So you mentioned that you'd heard of polysaccharides once or twice. I don't know that I ever have. So this is my first time. what are they, and what's so special about aloe and rice?
Well, George, don't feel like you're the Lone Ranger, because basically everyone that I tell this little story to is, you know, in your boat. But now, guess what? After you hear what I tell you, you don't have an excuse.
Truth.
So a polysaccharide, we know as Americans, I mean, gosh, for the last, what, half century, we've been told that sugar is bad, right? Mm-hmm. You ask the average American on the street, poll 100 Americans, mention the word sugar, I bet 90-something percent of them will think bad the first, the first thing that pops into their mind about sugar. And as a scientist, as a writer, as somebody who's very particular about the language, I want people to, if you take nothing else from our little conversation today, take nothing else from this, that all sugars are not equal, meaning that depending on their source, number one, and depending on their biochemical structure, number two, those two key characteristics determine goodness or badness, let's say. And, you know, life's not really that very dichotomous most of the time, but for simplicity, we'll use it that way. So a monosaccharide is the simplest form of sugar, and that's something like high fructose corn syrup. So I think most people agree that if you are eating high fructose corn syrup every day, it will spike your insulin, it will spike your glucose, it will do all sorts of bad metabolic things to you that over time set you up for diabetes, cancer, heart disease, you name it, the whole neurodegeneration, the whole nine yards. So definitely kick the high fructose corn syrup out of your diet. The second more complex sugar is called a disaccharide, and that the most common one there is something like sucrose or white table sugar. And again, if you're eating sucrose every day, that's probably not the best thing for your health. It's very similar to high fructose corn syrup in many ways. And then finally, you have these polysaccharides. So these are complex sugars. So look at the word poly, many, and then saccharide, sugar. So many sugars. And so you have literally hundreds of glucose units attached together by these very sophisticated and complex, they're called glycosidic bonds. And so structurally, they're like 5D molecules or compounds. You cannot even draw these things on a sheet of paper. That's how complex they are. They're so dense with information and they're so enormous that, again, it's impossible to draw these things. And so the ones that are coming from aloe vera and rice bran are the ones that my colleagues and I have studied and run all of these studies and published all these scientific peer-reviewed papers. And so what we've shown time and time again, in just sort of a global sense, these things have very significant impacts on our immune system, number one. And then I'll talk a little bit more about it. But so just to summarize that up, what a polysaccharide is a complex sugar. So please be mindful. You hear all these talking heads out there saying, oh, sugar's bad. But it's a blanket statement. It's throwing the baby out with the bathwater. It's not recognizing all the different sugars that are found in nature and the fact that you just cannot say that. That's an ignorant, factually incorrect statement to say all sugars are bad, because the ones, the polysaccharides from aloe vera and rice bran, are far from bad. In fact, they are very beneficial. So I hope, if nothing else, folks learn something today about the use of the word sugar and why you have to be mindful of how you use it. Because if you just say all sugar is bad, you're wrong. You're point blank wrong.
Is the monosaccharide versus, well, I guess all three, We are stripping away the other saccharides to make a one saccharide, or is that a naturally occurring thing?
So those are naturally occurring. So like in the case of corn, you know, corn gets grown and then milled and brought into the field, and then it's taken through a processing a process to make this high fructose corn syrup. So it's turned into a sweetener with different extraction methods and what all that is done to it to turn that corn into a sweetener. But essentially it goes from a more fibrous type of carbohydrate into the simplest form. Table sugar, I guess you could say the same thing. Cane, you know, sugar cane that's grown in the field definitely has fibrous content to it, but that fiber is stripped out of it to create sucrose. In the case of rice bran and the polysaccharide from aloe vera, it's a little bit different in the sense that you're not turning the rice bran into a lower form or a lower structure of sugar. The rice bran is the inner layer. If you look at the husk itself, that's inedible, right? That's the outer layer. You can't eat it. If you put it in your mouth, it tastes like you're eating hay or something. So that gets taken off first. The rice bran is the next layer underneath the husk that covers the white endosperm. And the white rice is just this endosperm fibrous material that 70 to 80% of the rice sold in the world is white rice. So the rice bran just simply gets stripped off, and it's either in most cases thrown away or fed to livestock, which is ironic because actually the animals are eating the most beneficial part of the rice as opposed to what we humans are doing. In the case of aloe vera, the gel is 98.5-99% water. And so you have to take out, a lot of times when people hear me talk about aloe vera, the first thing they think of is it's a topical solution, right? I mean, most people only think of aloe vera for a sunburn or a cut or a wound. It's a fine application. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it's a limited one in the sense of, do you consider or do you think about what is in that gel that gives it that healing property? It's those polysaccharides. But again, it's 98.5-99% water. You could not possibly drink enough of that gel to get a therapeutic or physiological benefit from the polysaccharide content that's in that gel. So what we do with our products is we have all of that water stripped away. Some of the other materials, it's not just polysaccharide. Aloe vera is actually an incredible plant. It's got amino acids, fatty acids, vitamins, minerals, elements, cofactors, metabolites, of course, the polysaccharides. I mean, this is really, truly one of Mother Nature's gifts to humanity, along with rice. But all that other stuff gets taken out to concentrate the polysaccharide into a level or an amount or a volume where you can get that therapeutic or physiological benefit. And we're only talking, in most cases, a few hundred milligrams, maybe a couple of grams per day. So in the context of the average person eating, what, 2,000 to 3,000 calories, maybe people that are really big and really obese, they're eating even much more than that. You're only talking about, you know, a very, very small amount of material compared to the rest of your macronutrient intake for the day. So to answer your question, I would say that it's just a matter of getting the material out of the plant to be able to be the most usable in terms of the health promoting benefit that you could expect to get. And again, this is not my opinion. This is based on all of the science that we've published over these last nearly 20 years.
How were you able to figure out that it's aloe vera and rice? Did you just start looking?
So again, I completely contribute and attribute my entire, what I'm doing today to these two people that I mentioned earlier. Dr. McDaniel, 40 years ago, was sitting in his office in a hospital in the Dallas area, and he had 8 or 10 guys that had HIV at that time, which, you know, think back to the mid to late 80s. This was prior to any kind of antiretroviral medication that could potentially help people. Back then, if you got HIV, it was basically a death sentence. You had this virus that went out of control that just wiped out your CD4 helper cells. And so these guys were taking this aloe vera product and they had no viral load and their CD4 cell levels were normal. totally medical heresy. Like, how, you know, like, what are you talking about? Like, right. How do you even understand this? And Dr. McDaniel at that time had no interest in nutrition. He's just running his pathology unit, you know, just every time the fax machine prints a page, he's making money, you know, like he's just sitting there running his unit. But thankfully, those guys would not take no for an answer. He, you know, they tried several times to say, hey, Dr. McDaniel, help us understand why this aloe vera product is so beneficial. And so he ended up going down a long line of research with his mostly colleagues from Texas A&M at the vet school. They ended up running a bunch of studies. And then fast forward 20 years later, when he and I met, now he's collected all of this information that he and his colleagues have put together. And so, among other things, what they had discovered was that these polysaccharides were very anti-infectious, whether it was a virus, a bacteria, a fungus, some type of pathogen. These polysaccharides were basically signaling to the immune system, either to the natural killer cells, the T cytotoxic cells, you know, whichever component of the immune system, to attack this invader to basically eliminate infection. So that was part of their path of discovery that then set us up for other things. Excuse me. But really, I owe all of this to, you know, his discoveries, he and I meeting through a mutual friend. And then Barbara, her story, again, she was a patient at the cancer center at the University of Miami. And I receive a letter one day to my office. I didn't know this lady from Adam. I get this letter from her and she's introducing herself to me. The cancer center used to do this quarterly publication before the internet killed print media. And she had a story about her, you know, they would do this nice feel good publication every quarter. And so one quarter they had a story about her and her survival and all this. And she attributed her existence and her survival to this rice bran product. And she introduced me to the company that makes it. And so it created, I basically had two simultaneous parallel lines of research running for about a solid 10-year period, one side on the aloe vera and the other side on the rice bran. And so as I was being in charge of running all these studies at the same time, we just made one incredible discovery after another that really took my career to another level. Again, as I had mentioned, I was for many years already interested in nutrition and supplementation and exercise. And I was already doing that kind of work, but I really didn't have, like, let's say, one thing to hang my hat on, so to speak. There was not one area where I was truly interested, but it just, because I'm the type of personality where if I meet you and you telling me about your story and, you know, what your interests are, I'm kind of like a chameleon, basically. Excuse me. If I find something that sounds interesting to me, I will adapt to it and I will sort of incorporate it into myself and then move forward with it. And that's exactly what happened when I met Dr. McDaniel and Barbara. Their stories to me were so compelling and so potentially exciting that I wanted to be a part of it. And in the case of Dr. McDaniel, it's kind of like you could consider he and I like runners in a some sort of a relay. Like, he's basically, you know, passed the baton off to me from all the work he and his colleagues done. And now I've taken that baton and I'm running with it and I'm teaching other people and, you know, kind of in the same realm. I mean, I would love at some point to have more funding to do research. And actually, the research that we conducted in people with Alzheimer's and MS is only due to the generosity of one family who had four family members die of Alzheimer's. They heard Dr. McDaniel giving a lecture one day about using the polysaccharides in some people with Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and they felt very inspired to help him conduct more research. And he was not at a university at that time, and he and I had just met not too long before that. And so I was given the opportunity to run that study, actually the two studies in Alzheimer's and MS, just again, thanks to the generosity of this one family, because you will commonly not find any money for funding for nutrition, either at NIH or CDC or, you know, all these other foundations. They may talk a good game publicly about their interest in nutrition, but at the end of the day, they're really only interested in making licensing deals with big pharma or biotech. And that would consist of something like a drug or some sort of genetic therapy. So, you can imagine me at the University of Miami, that we don't have, you know, it's a small private institution. It's not a large state school. So there's no department or center or school of nutrition at the University of Miami. I was one of literally just a handful of people for about a 20-year period doing all of this nutrition research. And it was only through my own networking and ability to talk to people and, you know, sell myself and sell the opportunity to do good quality research at the university that even that occurred. And I don't mean to sound too arrogant or egotistical about my own talent, but it was just, you know, my own interest spurred me to create a niche that actually is no longer there. I mean, once I left full time and once all of our studies concluded, all of that went away, basically. I mean, I would have students contacting me all the time, either undergrads or grad students or medical students or postdoctoral students. I would get this just massive amount of student interest because they wanted some experience in research. And then if it somehow fell into nutrition and or supplementation or exercise, then they wanted to be a part of that. So there for a while, I had this really good sort of operation or enterprise going. But the reality is we published our first paper from the Alzheimer's study in 2013, and we showed clinically and statistically improvement in cognitive function in people with moderate to severe Alzheimer's disease taking this polysaccharide product. George, that's unheard of. I mean, there's no other, and don't take my word for it. Again, go to PubMed, the gold standard for the collection of all of the peer-reviewed science in the world. I mean, it's the National Library of Medicine's repository. Go there and search for any other article, and I can share this article. Actually, we've published four now from the Alzheimer's study, three from the MS study. I can share these articles with you and your listeners. Anybody who wants it can go to our website, but go there, do your own homework, go to PubMed.gov, try to find any other intervention. I don't care if the five FDA approved drugs for dementia do nothing. You're lucky if you have like stabilization of your condition and it doesn't continue progressing, but at some point you'll continue falling off the cliff. Any type of diet, any other dietary supplement, exercise, hyperbaric oxygen, acupuncture, red light therapy, music therapy, sound therapy, I don't care what it is. And again, I don't mean to sound arrogant when I say this, but nothing else has showed the same type of result that we did in people with moderate to severe Alzheimer's disease. These were people on average 79.9 years of age. They had to have been diagnosed at least for 1 year. So these were old folks, at least diagnosed for 1 year. They didn't just have Alzheimer's. They had diabetes, depression, heart disease, all sorts of other comorbid issues. And according to the ADAS-COG, which is the gold standard for assessing cognitive function, we showed and please pay attention to this point, clinically and statistically significant improvement in cognitive function. Why do I make this distinction? Because if you have a very large number of subjects or assessments in your study, the law of large numbers says anything can be statistically significant just by chance. But does it have any clinical or practical relevance or meaning? On the ADAS-COG, if you show a change in the score of 4 points or more, good or bad, that is considered clinically or practically relevant. And that's exactly what we showed at 9 and 12 months. We assess cognitive function at baseline 3, 6, 9, and 12 months. And then we drew blood at baseline in 12 months. Unfortunately, our funding was limited, but at the cellular level, to support that clinical change in cognitive function, we showed an overall improvement in immune function, the CD4 to CD8 ratio. That's our helper cells to our cytotoxic cells. That's a very important ratio for all of us, actually, not just for people with Alzheimer's. You want to keep that optimal all throughout your life. We showed reductions in inflammation according to TNF-alpha and VEGF. Those are two proteins that we look at inflammation, commonly looked at in heart disease and cancer. Our paper was probably the first one that showed that in people with Alzheimer's disease. And then finally, we showed just under a 300% increase in adult stem cell production, according to CD14 cells. Now, one of the reasons we live every day is the body continues, as it goes through this cellular replication process, this life and death process called apoptosis, the body loses that capacity like it loses so many things as we pass through the lifespan. So again, remember, these were folks 79.9 years of age on average, and we showed just under a 300% increase in that adult stem cell production process. Other research has shown that CD14s can become neurons. So the body's own inherent intelligence allows it to recognize where damage is. You provide it the raw materials that it needs to function properly. The genes interpret that information. They guide the cells in how to function, good or bad, depending on what you feed it or, you know, what you give the body. And then those CD14 cells, our theory, we didn't have study money, you know, money in the budget to look at the brain, look at actually the morphology of the brain and how that changed over that 12 month period. That's basically the only thing we couldn't do. But it only makes sense to us that those CD14 cells migrated out to the brain and either created new neurons, repaired damage, created new synapses. I mean, there's a whole host of things that could have gone on there under this general term of neuroplasticity. But George, that was the most, and to date, that has been the most exciting work that I've done in my scientific career. After that first paper was published in 2013, I tried two times with NIH, National Institutes of Health, two times with the Alzheimer's Association to get more funding, more research money to extend this line of work. You know what I got in return? A big goose egg. I got nothing. Anybody who tries to tell me otherwise that people in places like NIH and Alzheimer's Association are interested in nutrition or dietary supplements to help people with the sixth leading killer of Americans, I'm going to tell you, you're full of crap. Because I submitted applications showing something that actually could help the quality of life of people suffering from this terrible, tragic disease. And I got nothing in response. So anybody out there who thinks that these so-called talking head experts running around publicly saying, oh, yes, nutrition's important, this and that. Oh, yes, you need to make that a very important focus. Hogwash. Shame on you. My colleagues and I showed something that has not been duplicated or replicated by any other intervention. And oh, by the way, to make sure I'm FTC compliant in this conversation today, do not, no one go from this conversation and say, Lewis said you could use nutrition to treat disease. I am not saying that at all. Pharmacology takes a chemical or something synthetic, alters a metabolic pathway to try to treat a symptom of a disease. That's the pharmacology model. The nutritional model says, give the body everything that it needs. We're not looking for magic bullets here. That's why our formula didn't just include polysaccharides. It included several other things. The cells need all of these materials. Oxygen is our first nutrient, right? After that, we need vitamins, minerals. After that, we need all these other things like polysaccharides. The cells need all of these things simultaneously to function properly. The genes interpret that information. The genes do nothing. That's another thing for folks to remember. You do not have a genetic predisposition to anything. You have bad behavior. You don't inherit bad genes. You inherit bad behavior based on what your parents and your grandparents and the people around you do that you adopt. So let's make it clear. Genetic predisposition to anything is maybe 2-3%. It's behavior, people. Please get off of this notion about genetic predisposition. But again, the nutritional model says you give the body the raw materials that it needs to function properly. The genes interpret that information. They guide the cells in how to function. And then the body restores and repairs and heals itself. It returns itself to homeostasis. That's the nutritional model. That is far different from treating disease with a pharmaceutical. So please, no one ever, I don't ever want to hear anybody tell me or accuse me of saying that I use nutrition to treat disease. I don't do that. I've never said that in my career, in my life, and I never will. So we're FTC compliant here. We're not talking about using nutrition to treat disease. We're doing something way more powerful and way more fundamental than that. And if I sound like I'm getting a little bit emotional right now, please forgive me for that, because it is very emotional for me, because I conducted research going completely against the grain in a very conservative, conventional place like the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine, that's so dependent on this pharmaceutical funding for its operation. And imagine me doing all of this nutrition, dietary supplement, exercise training research at the medical school. You want to talk about being a black sheep? You're talking to a black sheep. And I had to leave it. I had to go away from it from that paper, that first paper in 13 up into my resignation in 17. It was about a 4-year period there where I was still, you know, running other studies and getting things published and wrapping up commitments that I had made to other funders. But I knew at that point, once I kept getting rejected, I knew I was not going to spend the rest of my life banging my head against the wall, making it bleed, trying to get these bureaucrats. That's basically like gambling at Vegas. I mean, literally, you submit these proposals, these applications, it's like going into a black hole. You have no idea really who's reading it, who's making the final determination. You really don't have a clue. But I was not going to spend the remainder of my existence trying to convince these people that there was something special about what we had done, and basically waste my time, because as a professor, you don't make a lot of money anyway. I mean, I'm working 60, 70, 80 hours a week running all these studies, and I'm pinching nickels and pennies and dimes the whole time. And so, you know, after a while, you say, well, am I going to continue killing myself this way, or am I going to leave this environment and do something else? And I chose the latter. And so that's where I am today. And I'm not bitter. I want people also to understand I'm not bitter. I am very emotional about it, but I'm not bitter in the sense that I met so many incredible people along the way, like Dr. McDaniel and Barbara. Dr. McDaniel still with us. I bless that man's heart. He's nearly 90. He still goes to his office every day, still is fighting the good fight like we are. Barbara, unfortunately, she did ultimately pass. But again, there are lots of people like the two of them and many other people I've worked with in my career who have helped me get to where I am today. And I want to continue, fighting the good fight and helping people who otherwise feel like they have no hope or there's nothing they can do to help either themselves or a loved one or, you know, whatever the case may be. And that's basically, George, what I do every day. I'm a customer service guy. I'm a marketer that's a scientist at heart, but now a marketer and everything that an entrepreneur and a founder does to try to build something from the ground floor and turn it into something successful that can help people.
Well, it makes all the sense in the world to me why it is that you would be emotional. You know that you have something that is helpful, and I can't imagine how frustrating it would be to have part of the reception that you've gotten. But here we are getting the word out about this, and I think it's really exciting, and I'm very grateful for your work and for you coming on the show. Where can people learn more? How can they take advantage of these polysaccharides that have shown to have such positive results?
The best source of information, the most comprehensive, would be our main website, drlewisnutrition.com. That's D-R, no period, Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, nutrition.com. We have pretty much on every major social media channel the same handle, Dr. Lewis Nutrition. But of course, those are, you know, short videos, not nearly as comprehensive as our main website. And Daily Brain Care is the flagship product under our brand. That's the product that you combine all that information from both the Alzheimer's and MS studies that led to the creation of Daily Brain Care. So I'm happy anybody can, we have an email address, a phone number on our website, or, you know, message me through social media. I'm happy to answer any questions anyone has about the research, the products, any questions that we have a very extensive FAQ section on the website that I've taken the time to go through. And, you know, a lot of questions that people would commonly have are already answered there. I know people don't typically like to read anymore, but if you are a reader, you have plenty of material to read on drlewisnutrition.com, plenty of videos to watch as well. And Again, I'm grateful, George, for you having me on your show today and having the opportunity to have another experience of sharing what polysaccharides are from aloe vera and rice bran and all of the work we've done on them and how they can benefit people. And I've been taking my own formula for, the last anecdote I'll tell you is I've been taking my own formula for over a decade. I've had my mother on it for 12, 13 years. My wife started on it when she was pregnant 5 years ago. Our daughter, when she turned 6 months old, I started giving it to her. She's now four. So anybody that thinks, you know, either you're too young, too old, you're pregnant, whatever, no, forget it. If you're alive and you're swallowing and you're living and breathing and you can swallow, it's for you. It's not because you're, you know, waiting to get sick or whatever. My goodness, prevent stuff from happening to you in the first place. Who wants to have neurodegeneration or cancer or diabetes or heart disease if you can use something like these polysaccharides to help you prevent stuff like that in the first place? So anyway, I would be the biggest hypocrite in the world if I was selling something that I didn't personally take or give to my family. And I want people to understand. I mean, my goodness, I put my name on the label. It's not like I'm trying to hide anything or be deceptive. I mean, this is, you know, I don't know how much more credibility I could have with spending all those years in academics, running the research, and now being in business based on all of that research. So for me, it's a, you know, this is, it's like my inanimate baby, you could say. My business is my baby. And so I'm taking care of it and trying to grow it into a responsible adult. And again, that's why I'm here talking with you this morning. But thank you again for having me. And I'm happy to come back anytime.
Well, it was my pleasure. And I, again, appreciate all of your work. If you enjoyed this much as I did, show it, John, your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to Dr. Lewis Nutrition. It's DRLEWIS nutrition.com. Check out everything that John and I have been talking about today. Check out the daily brain care supplement that accomplishes all the different things that John's been talking about. And it's a great way to get your polysaccharides. And it's been an education for me, John. So thank you so much.
Excellent. Thank you.
And until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.